You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
What it is, what it do, welcome to Fresh Take and the Fresh Footy Podcast. I am really honored today to have two gentlemen that are the best of talking about football in Canada. We start from Global TV, the one, the only, the super talented, Moses Waldo. Moses, thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it. Glad to be back once again.
And from CTV in Van, the one and only, Brett Lukiski. Brett, glad to have you guys on. Obviously, a very exciting time here in the football world. And Brett, you and I talked about everything last week, and I really want to hear from you. But Moses, we got to go to you first. You've had a really cool experience already with this Canada squad.
Yeah, you know what? Heading down to Atlanta to catch out that first game, and this is the team that just returned from Europe. So they played two very good and very tough friendlies against Netherlands and France, teams that were competing at the last World, or I should say at the current Euros as we speak, as both are in the semifinals. But both teams provided a certain element for Canada to face, especially with a new head coach coming in Jesse Marsh. So it was an opportunity for him to see his group. Going to Atlanta, as you mentioned, Josh, it was phenomenal. The atmosphere, you knew it. Even though it's the first time I've ever been to Atlanta, it felt like it was a real soccer city. You saw tons of the LV Celestia's jerseys, just blue and white streamed everywhere, Messi jerseys all over the place. And then you found a lot of people in the hotel I was at. I was right next door to Team Canada's. And there was tons of Canadian fans out there too, in full support. There was a local bar just down the street. And that's where I guess the Voyageurs were holding their little pregame party. And it was so cool to see Canadians just get excited for soccer. And that's something that, you know, I haven't been privy to growing up, but seeing now over the last few years with the team making the World Cup, we've seen the women have success as well. It's really fun to see. Atlanta was a blast, although it was more like 80 to 20, maybe close to like 85-15 when it came to Argentina fans. But overall, what an experience for both from the fan perspective as a Canadian, from a journalist perspective, and as well as just from a football overall competition. It's good to see Canada play some real high-quality talent.
On a personal note, I was really happy for you, Moses. When we did a pod way back and we talked about your career, this was one of the goals that you had, was to cover, you know, a Copa, a Euro, a World Cup, and to see you have that ability. Just personally, just when you get a little personal here, I was very happy that you had that ability.
I appreciate that, man. It was long. It's a process, as anybody knows in the industry. I'm sure Brett will attest to that. But once you get to accomplish these things, there is a business side of it. There's a lot of long hours, but it is satisfying to be part of something that is pretty cool. That happens once every 4 years or 2 years, depending on the tournament, and just really being in it. And that's something that is always going to live as a memory, and I hope we get to continue that with 26 and beyond.
So let me ask you one more question here, Moses, before we get to Brett again. So obviously you're not down there on Friday with one of the bigger moments in Canadian men history. Tell me about you watching the game on Friday and how you took it all in.
Well, I had to pre-tape the game because, you know, in Calgary, there's a stampede. So I had to, like, I made sure I did not go on any social media whatsoever because I did not want to know the score. And I had it almost, you know, revealed to me a few times. So, you know, you had to plug the ears and be like, la, 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 and just get out of there. But I had an opportunity once everything was done on the work side to just watch. And it was certainly exciting. I think it was one of the better quarterfinal matchups that was played amongst the teams that we saw so far at the Copa. And Canada's resolve was something that I was very impressed with, because there were many times I thought, even not just through that game, but through the course of this tournament, that they could have just capitulated, they could have fallen down. There was a lot of You know, obviously missed calls from the referees. That's not, you know, I guess, I don't know what you want to call the term, but let's say face. The officiating has been suspect at times, even with VAR, which is mind-boggling to me. But I guess that's part of human error. Then you look at some of like the times when they've conceded a goal, how would they respond or how they absorb pressure, especially with Jesse Marsh's tactics. He does believe in a high press and getting the ball back and instantly creating opportunities for yourself. I really do feel that Canada as a whole has done a phenomenal job. And so watching that game, I was a little nervy, especially when Venezuela got the equalizer and was putting pressure on Canada and they were a bit on the back foot. But going into penalties and watching, for me, I think the story is Maxime Crépeau, what he's been able to accomplish. And I was rooting for him. I was like, come on, man, just make a save or two. And sure enough, he did what he had to do to help Canada, and Canada did the rest when it came to executing the PKs.
Brett, we're waiting to get to you. Kind of your process of watching the game on Friday.
Well, for me, I think that was probably the most I've jumped back into my, like, being a fan of, yeah, of Canada soccer. Like, I've been obviously a fan of the program for as long as I've been watching the game. And that takes me back to, I mean, probably the other biggest win in the history of Canadian men's soccer. And that was the 2000 Gold Cup final against Colombia, which is, I was just 10 years old then. And that was so exciting to me there. And that was, I mean, I was home. I was the only one at home. Partner was at work. It was just me. And I couldn't believe how loud I was getting. I was fully immersed and just so emotionally invested in that game. And it was the most fun I've had, and nerve wracking at the same time. And I mean, to see, you know, Canada actually get it done in the shootout, actually get it done in those clutch moments, was so crucial. And it was so, it's something that you haven't really seen before. You know, you saw them in the Gold Cup. They fell late to the U.S. They fell in a shootout. These key clutch moments have never really been in the favor of Canada. And for them to not let that that great goal from Venezuela get to them too much, and to be able to work through that and really show that resolve, like Moses said, and to be able to continue playing and to generate more opportunities instead of just kind of sitting back folding like older versions of this team may have done. They came back and they were able to get it done. And like he said, Maxime Crépeau, Maxi has just been, he's been unbelievable for this team, taking over that spot for Milan Borjan, who was a rock for this club, especially getting them to the World Cup in Qatar. But you know, the one thing about Milan Borjan, about his play, he's always been so good, but penalties was never really his specialty. And Crépeau was able to step into that spot. And he made two big saves, got some help there with a miss as well. And that was just, it was such a big moment. And yeah, I can't remember the last time I've yelled that loud about a win. So it was huge.
Yeah, to kind of go on both your guys' point, it was really, you know, for me, covering the basketball side of things and seeing the uproar that we had last year qualifying for the Olympics, it was really, really rad. And then you get to see this side, and it goes to show, and I'm sure you guys both know, being in, you know, in the worlds you guys are in specifically, I'm kind of just locked in the one specific world, but it's really cool though, to see the outpour on social media after and see how many Canadians are passionate about growing the game. You know, I've been around DF soccer. And so I've gotten to see a lot of the growth of the game that way. And some of the building that you've had that way to get to this point. We already saw the women come away with an Olympic medal. And then I want to ask both you guys this, because, you know, this was a big moment leading up to this, because, you know, there was such an outpour of support leading to the World Cup, and then the World Cup didn't go the way we wanted, and then some results were not going the way we wanted, and it seemed all of a sudden this upswing in support for Canada soccer was starting to go down with some of the results, and now here we are. Moses, I'll let you go first on that.
Well, it comes down to structure. One of the things that Canada soccer hasn't had is stability. You know, they are in a massive deficit, and they had to bring in a new CEO, someone who can come in. A new president has just been appointed. But just the overall structure in terms of how Canada soccer kind of does its business has kind of changed, and they want to reform that with this new group that is coming in. Because sometimes you would hear that the president would feel like he has an overseeing power in terms of how things are done, but he only has one vote amongst the entire board. And now to kind of have everybody on the same page, that's the hope, fingers crossed, having a chance to talk to some of those people behind the scenes that have taken over that position, coming up with ideas and ways to help Canada soccer from behind the scenes is big. Also from financially helping these athletes. You know, that was a big stipulation with both the men and women. Are they going to get paid? Are they going to be paid adequately and fairly? And how they're going to do that? Then you have the issue with bringing in a head coach and not having the funds, but very fortunately to see three MLS sides from Canada, Vancouver, Montreal, as well as Toronto, all come together and say, hey, we're going to help because we understand there's a long-term vision that helps us in the long run developing Canadian players and having them on the international scene as well.
Brett.
Yeah, he kind of just nailed it right there. I mean, what I've noticed is just how these new people that have been brought in behind the scenes, you look at your Kevin Blues and Jesse Marsh, just all these new key pieces that have been brought in, and they've really just embraced their roles here. And I mean, I've been blown away by just the work that Kevin Blue's been putting in, how much time he's really been giving to the fans. He's been listening to the fans. I know that the hiring of Kevin Blue came as kind of a lot of people didn't really know who he was. Some people weren't exactly thrilled about the fact he didn't come from a soccer background. And some people were a little unsure about that, but I think that he's really embraced that. And then as well, when you look at Jesse Marsh, our new coach, with the ridiculous name, the MLS men's national team head coach, but you know, I still love it. And again, like just to add on to that, thank you to those three Canadian MLS franchises who really kind of helped. The name might be silly, but I think it's been beneficial, and he's really embraced this role in Canada, and he's been able to do a lot with this team in a very short amount of time. You know, you had that 4-0 loss against the Dutch in that first friendly, and you know, some people were already hitting the panic button because a lot of people had a lot of reservations about bringing in an American specifically. A non-Canadian was one thing, but to bring in an American, there were a lot of longtime fans, former players, a lot of people involved in Canada soccer who did not like the fact that we were bringing in someone from south of the border. But he's been able to do a lot. He's really been able to get everyone to embrace their roles. And I think we haven't seen the biggest example of that might be in Alphonso Davies right now. Little bit of a controversial decision to name him as captain. A lot of people, including myself, thought Stefan Isakio was kind of the man for that job, but Davies has been growing into that role and he's really starting to embrace it. And I think we saw that better than ever in that last match against Venezuela. That is the most complete left back 90 minutes I've seen out of Alphonso Davies in a Canada uniform. You know, he was doing his thing a little bit where he would, you know, dance around a couple guys, but he wasn't trying to go through the whole team. He was getting around that press and moving the ball up to his midfielders, to his wingers, and letting them do the work. And I was just blown away with how much he impressed me in that game.
Moses, any follow-up on there on Brett's comments?
Yeah, I just want to add to the points because it is bang on. I think we're starting to see the maturation process of Alphonso Davies. Jesse Marsh the other day spoke to the media and said that you can see him grow. It's not necessarily he doesn't have the skills. It's just now starting to flourish into his personality, where he does want to lead Canada, where he does want to be that person, say, hey, jump on my back. I'll take this to across the finish line wherever we need to be. And you saw those little increments here and there, but for him to wear the captaincy, the confidence from Jesse Marsh to do so, because you're right, Brett. Like, they could have gone with Isakio, who would have been the easiest choice, the simplest choice. He is a vice captain, but nevertheless, that would have just been on a lot of minds for those who follow this team. You're like, well, it just makes sense. But for Alphonso, if this team is going to go far, I think he is that key piece that's going to. And if it means putting the armband on him, to realize that and take it to another level, then so be it. I have no problem with him going to the attack, but it's just picking and choosing his spots. It's all going to come with the process. He's still young. We got to remember that. You know, it's something that he'll grow into, and I hope he can turn into, you know, our version of Philipp Lahm, except with height and maybe a little bit more speed. In his case, right? But Philipp Lahm was a phenomenal leader from that left back position. Knew when to come into the play. Really kind of set the tone from the back when he got the ball to the midfield. Nice little transition there. You could see Alphonso Davies being that type of guy. And I'm sure he probably learned a few things in Bayern Munich because Lahm's presence there was pretty felt everywhere. And he played a similar position. So there's probably a nice little thing there as well. But I personally I agree with Brett, just watching him evolve and seeing tactically what Jesse Marsch has been able to do with this team. Like, you got to think, a lot of people were kind of, you know, thinking, oh, here we go again with the Canadian team, especially with a new guy coming in, first game against the Netherlands. But maybe, Brett, you can talk about this. But for me, that game against France, it was a 0-0 draw. But it wasn't like Canada was absorbing pressure for the entire 90 minutes and just hoping to, you know, just kind of escape with something, like some kind of result. They did have opportunities on the offensive side, the final third themselves. It was nice to see. And even with, like, and it wasn't like it was a B-side for France. Let's be real here. Yes, you know, Kylian Mbappe came in for the final 15 minutes, but it wasn't like you didn't see Antoine Griezmann, Thuram, or any of these guys who, you know, are regulars and those who have had impacts with their national team in France not try to make a dent against that Canadian defense, and they held up. So that was another positive I took out of it, and it just kept snowballing from there.
Brett, any more to come back on that?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of nailed it there. I mean, that is not the way Jesse Marsch's teams play, is not to sit back and hope for a result. They push forward. They will go toe-to-toe with whoever they need to. And they will do whatever they have to try and do to try and get a result, to try and get a win. Sitting back and playing for a tie is not the way Jesse Marsch's teams are going to play. And I thought that they really, yeah, they brought it against France. They brought it even against Argentina. They had some chances there. Finishing continues to still be the biggest problem right now for Canada right now is taking advantage of those opportunities, putting the ball in the back of the net. But they had some chances, and, you know, what I've said about that Argentina game, it could have been 6-0, but Maxime Crépeau made some amazing saves, but it just as easily could have been 2-2 with just the fact that they had some really good opportunities, but they just couldn't take advantage of them.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to get to that. I will just say on my point, that was one of them. I mentioned it on IG. For me, you know, rooting for Canada and for England, that was one of the more stressful 15 hours of footy I've ever had to deal with. When I text you, Brett, I'm just like, England is going to penalties. Why? Well, I don't have to do this in back-to-back days. Also, we'll get to Euro, but I'm like, England never wins in penalties. And then for Canada, we've had a better track record in penalties going back to the women in the Olympics. But I got to say, I'll ask you guys both this before we get to the Argentina. Are penalties in soccer maybe the most stressful thing as a fan to watch?
I'd say so. Yeah. Yeah, I'll just quickly just say
yeah, that. I mean, yeah, they absolutely are. I mean, you are standing on your feet. You can't sit still. I know for me, I was like, whenever Argentina was stepping up, not Argentina, excuse me, when Venezuela was stepping up for every penalty, and I saw Maxime Crépeau's arms go out, my arms are going out. I'm just like, just try to make that net look big, like try to, you know, cut off that angle, make things as difficult as possible. And I mean, for me, that was twice in one day because you cheer for England, you cheer for France. So I had to deal with France and Portugal in the early afternoon and then Canada and Venezuela at night. And it was just for you and me, we both had two sets of penalties for our teams just go in within a few hours of each other. And I mean, that's just about as stressful as you can get. And yeah, do not like penalties, but I'm glad we got that win.
And you got to remember, penalties are a crapshoot. Right. Yeah. It really depends. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into it and variables that can really throw you off. Of course, with the Copa, with the exception of the final, it's straight penalties after 90 minutes. Right. So you don't have this extra 30 minutes to kind of really just reset or or see if you can you pull something off and go straight into it. So tactically, it's a little bit different from that aspect. So, and for me, maybe it's a bit of an, like, I think an advantage rather than playing an extra additional 30 minutes. If you're playing the 90, you know, even when you make a last minute substitution, because you feel that some guy can actually benefit you if it came down to PKs, you didn't necessarily have to deal with it, you know, an additional 30 minutes to maybe have a factor in that. You never know what could happen with a penalty, a foul, a card that could dismiss a guy. So for me, I'm thinking it's definitely nerve-wracking 100%. But those variables is what makes it so nerve-wracking, because you don't know. A guy could be on his best day and could just all of a sudden look like a world beater for whatever reason, and it could be any country. It's all level, even with the skill sets, because we've seen great guys and great players who've taken PKs and missed. And what were the odds, by the way, talking about Portugal was playing as well as Argentina? You had both Messi and Ronaldo miss penalties in consecutive days. Like, how does that happen? That is, I'm like, when was the last time that ever happened? Or has it happened where you saw two of those guys, whether it be for club or country, take penalties and miss?
Yeah, I mean, and for England, we're all very happy about a water bottle right now.
Yeah, that's right. And like, and we're another point happy. to that is when you go to the penalties and you like talk about extra time. I mean, England had that happen in the round of 16 against Slovakia. And I mean, Jude Bellingham's wonder goal sends it to extra time. Yeah. Harry Kane scores a minute in. But I mean, if there's no extra time and it goes straight to penalties, it's a completely different game. But that momentum had swung completely in favor of the team that had the more talent and was the better overall side. And they took advantage in that extra half an hour. So that could end up being something that could play into Canada's advantage tomorrow. You know, if they are able to get an early lead, if they hold on, maybe that late equalizer comes. And then instead of being dejected and going to 30 minutes where they have to hold on, go straight to penalties, and we can see that anything can happen. And that would be a battle of two of the two best goalies in the tournament between Emi Martinez and Max Crepo.
Absolutely. And Josh, for you, I'll have to say this, maybe the curse is broken when it comes to England and penalties, because they've won three of their last four games that have gone to penalties. So there's something there.
Maybe, you know, the jinx from the last Euro maybe has washed away, but we'll get to that. It was just a very stressful. It's interesting for me. Like, I know you guys are full footy fans, and whenever the international stuff comes, and I've talked to a lot of people like that, and I think it does help for me that, you know, is English and Canadian. So it helps when you have two teams you can root for at the same time. Actually, before we get to Argentina and Canada, I want to ask about this, but it's so nice to root for both your teams at the same time, being an English Canadian, but it's almost just really nice for football fans. You're in a really nice period right now, right? Because there's like really nothing else as far as sport is going on. You got baseball going on, but in Canada here, the Blue Jays aren't playing good. I know people have other teams, but when the Blue Jays aren't good, interest definitely dives down quite significantly. And you have the Copa going on, you have the Euro going on, and then we wait 2 weeks and then we have Olympics going on here. Do you, I'll go to you quick here, Moses, then Brett. Do you agree, like, this is almost better to have the Copa and Euro going on simultaneously?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's great for us in our time zone because we get to see football throughout the day, right? We have two matches or three matches depending on what goes on for the afternoon. But, yeah, it for me as a guy, I love watching afternoon sports because I have the rest of the day do what I want to do. But with the Copa, it just kind of adds on. I have a barbecue, have a beer, sit on the patio, watch a game. As you know, we're here in the middle, or we're starting up summer. It's an awesome time to be a soccer fan. These are two elite tournaments that come around, and there is some great competition. And there's a little bit of an incentive now with the caveat with Canada being part of that group and the only CONCACAF team remaining. I think it's just been a fantastic 24 summer so far, watching some great soccer and some elite players.
Yeah, Brett, same with you. Just, you know, being in that, and I hope that it, you know, it takes football fans like me that, like, oh, I'm in love with it and I'm watching it. And then the club season comes and then you're like, it's too much work. Because, I mean, it is, I will say, that's the one downside, is a lot of this is on your TSNs and on your SportsCenter in Canada. But then when we get to the EPL and the Bundesliga and all these other clubs, then it's just this, use a Canadian word here, kerfuffle, all over the place between where all the club teams are. It's all over the place. It was nice for a lot of fans when it was on DAZN, because a lot of us are getting DAZN for the NFL package. So you kind of got two for one. You could start early in the morning and watch some EPL or whatever before the NFL stuff starts. But now it's all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been great having both tournaments going on at once. Firstly, I mean, obviously Canada being in Copa has made such a difference. The Copa America in the past typically hasn't gotten that same sort of television like audience in North America, because it's just not shown in the past. So having both tournaments here has been so key. But yeah, you're right. And then especially if you are a fan of your North American club sports right now, MLS is still in full swing. The Canadian Premier League, that's still going on, and they're playing some fantastic football right now in that league. And there's just no one there to watch it, because everyone is just completely exhausted by the time that a full day of Euros and Copa is done. And I mean, the fact that, especially in MLS, these teams are having to do this without some key players. I mean, you look at Inter Miami, they got absolutely run out of the building by FC Cincinnati 5-1. Without Messi and Suarez right now. So that was rough for them. So yeah, it's been a lot, especially if you are keeping track of your CPLs and your MLSs, but it might be a little bit of a hangover. It might take me a few weeks to get into the EPL season and into all those European leagues once they get going. But yeah, it's been the summer of soccer, and it's been fantastic here in Canada.
And like I said, Olympics coming up. But let's talk about the game that's in hand. That's the big deal tomorrow evening / afternoon. Brett, we'll start with you, then go to Mo. Canada versus Argentina. Like you and I talked about in our last preview pod here, Brett, they played this Argentina team, I think, better than a lot of us did. They end up losing. I think there's always a chance. They're going in as big underdogs. Obviously, you're facing what some would consider the greatest footballer of all time in Messi. I still think it's Pelé personally. But it's going to be, you know, this is going to be a marquee matchup in Canada. Do you see a path for the Canadians to advance to the final?
I mean, of course, there's always a way to get there. The biggest thing is, for me at least, coming into tomorrow's match, is this is a vastly different team than the one that played Argentina in the first game of this tournament right now. They have come into themselves so much. The center back pairing of Derek Cornelius and Moise Bombido has, like, compared to that first game, to that last game, obviously Bombido had that one play where he got bullied off the ball and that led to that long goal there. But I mean, as a unit, they have been fantastic together. That whole back line has been so good. I mean, you look at Alistair Johnson, no one's talking about him enough. He has been just rock solid all game. He's the spokesperson for this team. I mean, there's no one better to have an interview with. I'm sure Moses would know. He's fantastic. He's so well-spoken, so funny. But yeah, they're just a completely different team. And I mean, everyone's been saying it, but the big catalyst of that has been the guy running on that left wing, Jacob Schaffelberg, the Maritime Messi.
He's great.
He has been unbelievable. It is crazy to think that a year ago in the Gold Cup, with Canada pretty much sending its B team, he was coming in as a sub. And he scores that goal against the United States in the quarterfinals, and that seemed to change his complete career trajectory for the Canadian national team. He's been unbelievable playing for this squad, and he has been so good. Coming into this right now, coming into tomorrow, he's currently second in the tournament in expected assists behind only Leo Messi. Like, he has not only scored, but he has done more to set up quality chances for their side than anyone else. And I mean, he's not quite 90 minutes fit right now, so we do suspect he'll come out of the game. Will Liam Miller be the guy to come in again? He has looked shaky. He's been a little bit in his own head. We know Liam Miller can bring it. He nearly scored that amazing goal against France in that friendly. We know that he is a very skilled player, had a great season in Preston in the championship. So we're going to need to see more out of him, more out of those subs. But it's been the MLS guys. It's been Jonathan Osorio, Richie Larea, Jacob Schaffelberg. Those have been the guys that have really been the catalyst. Even Tanny Olawuse has, he's looked pretty decent. He's still young. He still shows that inexperience a little bit at times, but he's been a really good spark off the bench, where personally I expected to see Theo Bear, but we haven't, or Jason Russell Rowe even, but we haven't really seen those guys come on at all. Tanny, it's been Tanny time in the last 20 minutes for Canada.
Moses, kind of the same question for you. What do you think of the path is for Canada to take up Messi in Argentina?
Well, I personally think, one of the issues in that first game was how effective Messi and those forwards were in terms of just dissecting that defense. You talk about what ultimately led to the goal, Brett, but even just earlier in the game, you saw multiple. It seemed like there were times when Kripal was going one or two VO, like he was just facing two different guys. Fortunately for Canada's sake, you talk about Kripal making those unbelievable stops. It could have been a lot worse in game number one. I feel Canada has learned a lot, and when you play a team a second time in the tournament, you're a little more familiar with them, and I think that actually gives Canada a much better opportunity in this game. They can't let players get in behind that defense, especially in between the two center backs. We saw that with Angel Di Maria a few times. But it looks like Argentina is a little bit banged up. And for me, I think what is the bigger story is not so much in terms of Canada, yes, has gotten better and improved vastly, but how Argentina has just really looked average. You know, they've had their opportunities, but they haven't quite put in that second or third gear we've been accustomed to in recent tournaments, both the previous Copa as well as the World Cup. I think part of it is with Leo Messi. He is hurt. He did sit out the third game. He did have a knock, and he did look average in their quarterfinal matchup that ended up going into penalties. And a game they could have lost to Ecuador. Like that was a game that Ecuador could have just won in regulation in the final stages of injury time. It's not a team that I think is maybe we thought could have been. But I really think that's going to be the story, is like how Argentina responds, because Canada has certainly gotten better as this tournament has gone. Argentina has kind of looked average. Where the key factor, though, is going to be the man between the sticks. Emiliano Martinez, time and time again, has bailed this team out in this tournament in games. I the ones that come to mind were the game against Chile, where they managed to get a late goal and pull it out. But there was a stretch, even though Chile didn't look good, there was a stretch for a good 15 minutes where he faced an onslaught of shots. And I don't think any other goaltender could have got to that if his name is not Emiliano Martinez. So he's done it time and time again, especially in the penalties and what we saw in the quarterfinals. He is going to be that X factor for them. But this is an average-looking Argentina side by their standards. And Canada has done this. They have done a huge trajectory up, and it's going to be a fascinating match. But it's just little margins that are going to be the key piece for the game on Tuesday.
I'll ask you, gentlemen, both this. Start with you, Moses. Your prediction for Tuesday.
Oh, my heart. You can see the red background in the back, right? Yeah. So it's almost got a red and white motif. my heart wants to say I think Canada can pull this off. But I do feel, as I mentioned, Emiliano Martinez is going to be a big factor in that game. And when Canada gets to that final third, they will have opportunities. But it's the guy between the sticks that's going to be the one that pulls it out. We'll see if Messi is a little bit better. They're going to need him to be. That is for sure. But I'm going to have to say it's going to be a close one. I'm going with 2-1 Argentina.
Right.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, Crepo is going to have to make some huge saves, and you know he's going to make at least one for Canada. I'm just not sure about their forward unit and their ability to finish chances right now. There's been so many opportunities, and it just hasn't been consistent enough. So, and like Moses said, I mean, Emi Martinez is probably, if not one of the best goalies in the world right now, if not the best. So it would I still see his save from the World Cup 2022 against Kolomoani at 3-3. I still see that in my nightmares, because France had a chance to win that World Cup, if not for that save. But I think it's going to be 1-0 Argentina. It's going to be probably a goal sometime in the second half. I think Canada's going to play them really tight. It's going to be a really rough, tough affair, and they're going to make them scratch for every inch. But Messi's just, I think he's just too tricky, and I think his ability to find his teammates in tight spaces is, it's going to come through once, and they're going to find a way to probably get one. And I'd love to see Canada win, but I'm going to say 1-0 to the defending champs.
Yeah, I mean, like you guys both said, in my heart of hearts, I want to go for Canada, and let's all hopefully be wrong. But I got that 2-1 in the back of my mind. I can see Canada get the opening goal and give us all hope, and kind of be like that Turkey and Netherlands game, right? Where Turkey looked so good, and I was like, oh man, maybe Turkey's gonna put. And then the Netherlands kind of found their route to get to the next round of the knockout stage. Let's get to the other games here before we get out of here. Uruguay and Colombia, Brett.
I mean, this is certainly an interesting match, and I think that it's one that probably, I don't think a lot of people had marked down for their final four. I think a lot of people were probably looking at Brazil to get to this stage. And then between Colombia and, I mean, a lot of people thought it was going to be the USA playing Colombia in that quarterfinal. I think me personally, I thought that home crowd and just the sheer talent the USA has, and this is a story for another time, I thought they could have gotten to that semi, but they couldn't even get out of the group. So it's such a tough one. We're seeing the resurgence of James Rodriguez right now, which is just incredible to see. I'm so happy to see him performing at this level again for his country. Uruguay, I mean, yeah, they were able to take down that Brazil side, but I mean, I don't think they've looked all that convincing outside of like that 5-0 win over Bolivia. They've been playing well, but I mean, I have questions about their ability to finish. As a Liverpool fan, anytime I see Darwin Nunez up front, I question a team's ability to finish and score goals. So it's a tough one. I think I'm leaning Colombia on this one. I've just liked the way that team has been, they've been performing so far through this tournament. So I'm going to take them to win this one. I think it might go to penalties again, but I think I'm taking Colombia to make the final.
Moses, where are you going?
You know what? There were some great points that Brett made for me, like James Rodriguez. Like, my God, what? It's nice to see a guy who had all this promise really kind of buckled under that weight and then was able to reinvent himself. And not only from a club level, but just helping out his country. And, you know, it's such a cool thing to watch how a player, when he gets embraced on the national stage, you know, they don't do it any better than those in South America, that's for sure. But going to this game, I'm really leaning towards Uruguay. I think they've been the best team overall. They've looked better. You talk about the often mercurial Nunez up top, but there are times when you think it's those sitters, he just, for whatever reason, can't get to them. But it's those world goals, those worldly goals. You know, just he's known for it. This guy has the phenomenal talent. If he can put it together, watch out. But for me, the engine that kind of, you know, the guy who stirs the drink, whatever, you know, euphemism you want to use, is Francisco Valverde, Rodrigo Valverde. He's been phenomenal this tournament, and I think he continues it. The game against Brazil, that was more of a knock him down, drag him out. Like, it was ugly overall for Uruguay, but the fact that they're able to come out on top of that, I think it kind of just adds to the pedigree. And for me, I like Marcelo Bielsa in terms of what he's been able to provide this group as a manager, very similar to what Jesse Marsh has. And you kind of see the lineage there between the two. So for me, I'm leaning towards, I think it's going to be a close affair. I think it's going to be more of those games where it's going to be 2-0 for Uruguay. I'm not saying that Colombia won't have their chances, but it's going to be one of those games where it's going to be tight. Uruguay goes up 1-0, and then they'll get a late one because Colombia is putting all the pressure, and they get their little, you know, obviously weak in the back, and they on the counter. I think Uruguay just seals the game. So for me, Uruguay's been the best team. I like where they look. They'll go to the final, and they'll take on Argentina.
All right, and then we get to the Euro Cup really quickly to talk about the final there. Moses, who is your final two in the Euro Cup?
Gosh, you know, I'm going to start with England and Netherlands for that one. Like for me, I look at the Netherlands and I really like this team, but they just can't seem to put it all together for a full 90 minutes. Whereas England has kind of looked up, you know, up and down, but there are guys who can emerge. And Bakary Saka, to me, was great. Phenomenal in that game. He came out to that party in that quarterfinal. I think that performance carries over. As good as the Netherlands have in terms of the talent, I think a guy like Saka, you throw in Kane, Bellingham, if they, you know, they feed the ball to a guy in the box, I'm going to give England the edge. I think they go to the final for the second straight Euro. And on the other side of the bracket, I really do like this France team. They haven't looked great, but just like any team, sometimes you just need a little bit of grit. I find with this French team, they have that. You know, they whether it be, you know what, we're going to have to drag this game out, go through extra time and maybe to penalties. But I really do like the French team, and I do feel that they're going to advance. We'll see a France-England final. Fingers crossed that these games actually do end in 90 minutes, because I felt like the quarterfinals, I don't know if about you, Brett, or Josh, but they really dragged on like three out of the four. And it wasn't any, like, you weren't excited on the edge of your seat, with maybe the exception of the Germany-Spain match. Some of them, they were just kind of god awful. So hopefully they'll be done in 90 minutes and we'll have a fantastic final. I'm going France and England.
Part of that is Gareth Southgate football as well. Part of that is that.
Kevin, but you see the class when England moves up, and when they were down 1-0, you saw them put on the pressure, and it didn't take them long to come back. And it took a great goal from Saka, but I mean, there's still quality in that England side.
Yeah, I've been really hard on Southgate for anyone that follows me on Instagram, but you know, the results are there. You know, there was a really good can't remember the broadcaster on the BBC, but he was talking about England's past success before Southgate got there. I think in the last, it was like 30 or 40 years, they'd only won 6 knockout games in 30, 40 years, and they have now won 7 with Gareth Southgate, including getting to a Euro final. We're here in a Euro semifinal, a quarterfinal of a World Cup. So while the football may not be the most exciting at times, the results do speak for themselves. And as much as I did like the Spain team when Brett and I did our last show, it just feels like it's going to be France and England. It just feels destined to have that. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's coming home or anything just yet, but it does feel like a much more inspired team now in the knockout stage. And I do feel like Harry is due to get a goal here, especially, you know, in the semifinals. It would be absolutely brilliant to see what Kane can do. But as you were talking about there, Mo, I've been really happy with how Saka has been playing. And hopefully, fingers crossed, Palmer gets to start the next game. Because when Palmer's came in, it's been a different football club for this England team. So I will also go with England and France. Brett, round us out.
I mean, yeah, I hate to be boring, but I'm going to complete the sweep on this one. I'll start with my French side. I mean, Spain has been so exciting. They've been so fun to watch. They've been great. They have been the class of this tournament up to this point. France has looked, I mean, abysmal for the most part. They've looked pretty strong defensively. They've had to get bailed out by a couple of saves at key moments, but they've looked very sound. I've liked what I've been seeing from guys like Koundé, who've been really getting up the pitch a lot. Those wingbacks, Koundé and Teo Hernandez, they've been doing a great job. I think that Kylian Mbappe is struggling a little bit with that face mask. I think it's just throwing something off of his game. The rest of the team looks a little bit discombobulated at times, but it just feels like they just need one. If France can get one goal at some point, like maybe in this first half, if they can tie the game, if they're down 1-0, if they can find a goal, those floodgates are going to open. They're going to feel that confidence. It's going to come soaring back, and then they're going to find a way to get this win, because that's just the way that France has been in these last few years under Didier Deschamps. They just find ways to find victories outside of one World Cup final, they get it done. And then when you look at the other side, I remember saying, I think I said it to you, Josh. I said it in a couple of my group chats as well, but round of 16, when Jude Bellingham scores that goal and ties it up, I said, they are going on a run to the final now. Like, yep. That was the opportunity for that tournament to get rid of England. Once it didn't happen, you just felt like they were going to keep finding ways to do it. Even against the Swiss, it just never felt like they were out of it once that goal was scored, because they have all that talent on that side. And much like you, I joke about Gareth Southgate quite a bit. And when Saka scored that goal, I'm pretty sure I tweeted that high-end talent bails out Southgate again. Yeah. And you know what? It happened, but this team is too good. And, you know, we have seen Southgate start to make some adjustments. He's starting to turn to his bench a little bit more than he was early on. And there's just so much talent up and down that lineup. And like you mentioned, Cole Palmer, when he's been on the pitch, he's made a difference. And I think that, like Moses said, the Dutch just they've been consistently inconsistent in the way that they cannot put together a full 90 minutes. And they just find ways to switch off at key moments, and they've been able to bail themselves out. But I don't think they'll be able to do it this time. I think the run ends for the Dutch.
And look at them, and just kind of adding on to your point, Brett, just to quickly mention this, Josh. Yeah. Look what they did in the group stage. They fall to third, and then the luck of the draw, who they get? Romania. You know, then they get Turkey. And now they're going to face a stiffer competition with England. This is not like the two previous knockout rounds. So, yeah, I just to kind of add to your point there, it's going to be extremely tough for the Dutch if they can't put it together. They've gotten this far, but it doesn't mean you can't get over that hump for them.
It's been a very interesting switch side, just kind of talking to folks back home in England. You know, during the knockout stage, everyone's like, we got to sack Southgate. This is terrible. And now it's completely different. The coming home stuff has started, and the excitement for English football has been, I will say, like, I do think the Netherlands may have more fans at this next game, just from everything we've seen from the fan support out there in Germany. So I think the fan support, the Swiss did quite a good job with their fans at that event as well. So it's going to be a very, I'm going to be very nervous for this one. We have a lot of family coming over to watch this. So that's going to be very exciting. And once again, it'll be a very stressful 15 hours of footy for me.
But I imagine the beer is going to be flowing for you.
Oh, yeah.
Flying all over the place like you see in all those shots in pubs and restaurants and little party squares out in England.
Oh, yeah. And I'm supposed to go down to the AEW show down at the grounds on Wednesday evening. So if we win, believe, I will be an obnoxious England fan with my kit and with the flag as I make my way down to the grounds on Wednesday and at that show.
Yeah, tomorrow is going to be a rough one for me. I mean, you know, I work those overnights. I finished work at 8:30 in the morning here, and the France game starts at 12 tomorrow on the Pacific time. And then, so I have to stay up till 2 to watch that, go to bed for 3 hours, wake up to watch Canada at 5, and then go to work on Wednesday and do a hit. So that's going to be fun.
And I'm guessing for you, Moses, you got to dodge again.
Well, you know what? In between the sweltering heat that's hitting Calgary during the Calgary Stampede and just being on the grounds, I'm gonna definitely make my way. And if anything, if I'm kind of stuck somewhere, I got a laptop with me, so I'll make sure I'll be watching Canada's games as well as some of the early Euros. We're in a nice time zone. I cannot lie. Yeah. Like, this is just a perfect time to watch footy. So, and you know, I'm looking forward to the next 2 days and seeing where Canada goes. And I got no skin in the game when it comes to the Euros, so I'm just looking for entertaining footy.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you to Moses and Brett. It's been an honor to have you guys on here. Perhaps we'll have you when we get to the finals. And until next time, folks, cheers and enjoy the day, people.
Thank you for listening to the Fresh Take Network. Follow us on social media platforms at Fresh Take 42.